and welcome to Scary to Sleep. I'm your host, Shelby Scott. I wanted to spend this week celebrating different podcasts in the community who I think you guys should show some love to. I'll be sprinkling the love throughout the show, so stay tuned to the end for a brand new trailer for a show I think you guys will adore. I'm still fairly new to the podcast community, less than a year, almost a year, on the 30th, and you guys, I have to say, so far, the horror and true crime community has been nothing but welcoming and helpful and amazing, so I just felt like giving back in a tiny, tiny way by letting you guys know about these other shows. First, I wanted to tell you about Meet My Ghost. Host Sandy Tufts is, first of all, just amazing. And I get asked pretty often for shows similar to mine for those of you who have binged all my episodes. Also, whoa, people have binged my show. It's so weird to say. Anyway, this isn't about me. This is about Meet My Ghost. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and Sandy will lovingly read you all true ghost stories. Her latest episode about a UPS delivery, oh my god, it gave me serious chills. She's also got a gentle feminine voice to listen to, which is something that you guys have specifically asked me for. You guys get real detailed in your storytelling. I appreciate that. Hey, you know what you like, you know what you love, and I hope I can provide. Again, it's called Meet My Ghost. Go subscribe. I'll wait. Okay, you back? This isn't sponsored, by the way. I just love Sandy, and I think her show is fantastic. Let's get on to this week's episode. First up is a classic haunted house story by Vanessa Kennedy. This one is called The Perfect House. It was perfect. Exactly what we were looking for. It was a medium-sized Victorian-style three-story home. In the listing, it said it was built in 1900, so it's an old house, but it was perfect. Our realtor guided us up the pathway away from the street. The house stood nestled between row trees that shaded the driveway from the afternoon sun and the neighbor's hedge. We stood and stared at the house. It looked exactly like it did in the catalog. "You are going to love this," our bubbly realtor said, fishing out a key. She mounted the steps and unlocked the house. The door spun open and we filed inside. A crystal chandelier hung in the entranceway, guiding our attention to a carpeted staircase to the top floor. I wasn't sure if the furniture that was placed throughout the surrounding homes were original or if it was staged, but the house looked amazing, like a time capsule. Beautiful arches lined the doorways, and the afternoon sun trickled through the windows. We wandered through the house, breathing it all in. Our chatty realtor explained each room in detail and gave suggestions to make it our home. We came back to the stairs and started the climb. The fifth step creaked underneath the carpet. We walked down the hallway at the top of the stairs, beginning on the left. We passed a wash closet, a bathroom with a tub and a shower, two spare rooms. One was staged to look like a home office with one of those roll-top desks, and the other had two twin beds with matching comforters. On the right were a closet and the master suite. Light flooded the rooms, making the colors shine. In the master, the four-poster bed screamed at me to jump and lay on the mattress and sink in underneath the many pillows on the bed. There was a fireplace in the room with a large decorated mirror above it. The room was reflected in its gaze. In the corner of my eye, I saw something in the mirror. I turned my head to see nothing. I stepped closer to look at the mirror more closely. "The mirror is original to the house," Kathy, our realtor, said proudly of the artifact. The mirror was massive in its gold-painted frame. I smiled at my reflection. to have another reflection smile back. There was a young girl in a white nightgown with brown ringlets standing on the carpet in the middle of the room. She looked frightened and mouthed something that I couldn't understand. I spun around to see no one in the room except Kathy and my husband, who had their backs to me. I looked back to the mirror to see no little girl, just the room. I shook my head, convinced I imagined what I just saw, but I couldn't help feeling that that was real. Soon the incident was forgotten as the tour continued. My husband and I decided that this was going to be our home. Even with the thought that maybe our new house was haunted, we bought anyway. The furniture was exchanged for ours, and our pictures replaced the old ones. We had bought a few things from the estate sale, for instance, the mirror from the master's bedroom, which was moved to the parlor, the four-poster bed that was the most comfortable bed ever, a rocking chair, a few tables, and odds or ends. We tried to keep the house the way it looked for the most part. Soon it felt like our home, but an eerie feeling drifted into the house. The floorboards creaked and the radiator hissed. The doors would open and the windows banged. But it was an old house, and these things just happen. But it wasn't just the noises, it was the ever-foreboding feeling, like there's something in the house with us. A presence that was telling us to get out. I wasn't the only one to think that either. When we invited our friends over to our house, my friends could feel a chill in the air, even though it was a windless day in August. They said that they sensed like they were being watched. Even with all that, I still loved my house, but I hated being in it alone. Sometimes my husband had to travel for work, so for a few days I was left alone in the house. One of those times was during a thunderstorm. Tree branches scratched the windows as they were blown against my bedroom window. The latches jingled as the glass shook. Lightning at times filled the room, shooting shadows up the hearth. When the lightning lit up the room, there were glimpses of refracting light shining across the room, as if a light was reflected off a mirror. I knew the mirror was downstairs, but it felt like it had moved back upstairs. Then I heard a large bang that rattled the house. The bang came from downstairs. I cowered in my bed, hoping that I had just imagined it, but I could hear the rain more clearly even on the second floor. The front door was open. Then I heard the unforgettable creak of the fifth step on the stairs. Regardless of how you stepped on it, it would creak. Someone was in the house. The rain poured loudly and the house cowered under its fury. The wind blew violently against my window. There was a thud at the top of the landing, mere feet from my bedroom door. The floorboards creaked and a trail of thuds echoed through the hall. I looked over at my door and watched the brass, round-headed knob as it started to turn. My attention was torn away from the twisting knob as a flash of lightning came through the window, illuminating my room. And I saw the little girl. She stood there in her ghostly dress. She looked at me. Even though her eyes were white orbs, I could see that she had genuine concern and fear in her small face. I could see that her eyes were nervously moving from the door to me. She said, whispering, and then she disappeared, and the door was flung open. The door hit the wall with a loud crash. Nothing stood in the doorway. I laid there, frozen, and I felt two large hands wrapping themselves around my throat, and weight collapsing on my chest pressed my body into the bed. I felt like all the air was being cut off, and the grip getting tighter around my neck. I felt bruises starting to form from its imaginary fingers, I could feel my windpipe busting and my eyes starting to close. I had no air left to scream. I reopened my eyes soon after looking around. I was free. The pressure and choking was gone. I listened for anything to make a sound to make sure it was gone. The house had gone still once more. No more creaks or thuds or even the storm made a noise. I wasn't sure if I had imagined the whole thing or if it was just a vivid dream. But I could remember the pain and panic and pressure. It had to be real. And I couldn't help but wonder who that little girl was and who tried to strangle me. I crawled out of bed, gaining strength. I had to convince myself that it had been a dream. I didn't think that I had fallen asleep with the storm, but I might have. My feet left tiny thuds on the floor as I walked to the door. The door was closed the way I had left it when I went to bed. I grasped the doorknob and turned it, opening it into the hallway. No light shone in the hallway. I guess the storm had knocked the power out because the nightlight I had installed at the top of the stairs was not visible. I felt around for the table that was placed between my room and the closet. I pulled open a drawer and felt around for a flashlight. I flicked on the light to see the little girl once more. Her white orbs stared at me. And then the flashlight dimmed and went out, casting my world in darkness. I shook my head, getting over my fright. I banged the flashlight against my hand, trying to jiggle the batteries. Soon the hallway was illuminated once more. This time, no little girl. I aimed the light around to make sure no one was there. I walked downstairs and jumped as my foot hit the fifth step from the bottom as my weight made it creak. I aimed my light towards the front door, checking that it was closed. I walked closer to see the lock has turned and the button on the door was pushed in. I looked out the window to see that the storm had passed over and a small crescent moon was shining in the sky. I tried to look out at the street, but all I could see was the nose of my car sticking out at the end of the path. Victorian houses weren't built with garages, so I left my car at the edge of the street. I sighed and turned to look at my old empty house. I glanced into the parlor and saw the mirror. It hadn't moved. There was something on it or in it. I aimed my light closer, hoping the reflection would not block what I saw. Like I expected, the light from the flashlight reflected brightly, making me wince, but I could see something. I put the light down on the side table. In doing so, the parlor lit up like a projector. In the mirror, I could see my room, or what would be my room. There was my room and the same four-poster bed that I had just foolishly left. I watched as I saw the same little girl in a white dress run into the room with pure horror on her small face. She shut the door and stood frozen in the middle of the room, just like she was when I first saw her. Then she skidded over to the bed and hid under it. I could hear heavy thuds echoing from the hall, which rattled the whole house. I could hear the small girl's breathing under the bed as she tried to stay quiet. Then the knob twisted and the door was flung forward, hitting the wall just like it had in my dream. I saw a dark figure approach the room and stand in the doorway.
Come out, wherever you are,
I heard. The voice was mocking and menacing. I could now hear his heavy breathing as he paced the room looking for the little girl. I wanted to scream to distract the man or warn the little girl, but my voice was stuck in my throat. All I could do was watch as the figure knelt down and yanked the small girl out from under the bed. I watched as the memory unfolded. She was warning me of him. She was trying to protect me from him. I concluded as the memory faded away and the mirror went back to just being a mirror. The mirror's reflection had my old couch and me standing there like an idiot. I shook my head thinking that this was all a dream. The storm, the girl, the weird figure, the vision was all a dream. I grabbed the flashlight and marched back upstairs, determined to see me in my bed fast asleep. I walked by my husband's office. We had kept one of the spare rooms as an office as we had seen on the tour. I heard the floors creak and the wood straining. I looked into the dark room to see the outline of the rocking chair that we had saved, slowly rocking in the corner. The wind, I thought, shining my light towards the window that was nearby. I returned the light to the rocking chair to see an old woman in it. She was slightly hunched over and appeared to be sleeping. She was in a long black dress. I moved the light, trying to convince myself that I wasn't going crazy, when I heard the chair stop. I looked back to see the chair perfectly still and empty. Shaken, I turned to walk back to my room, but came face to face with the old woman. Her eyes were dark. Her jagged teeth hung out of her mouth. "Run," she said, warning like the little girl did. On the stairs, I heard the creak and the thuds as someone was approaching. I blinked and the woman was gone, and so were the thuds. I whirled around, shining my light everywhere. I was alone, and everything was still. I couldn't help but remember what Kathy had said about the listing. She had looked excited to be selling it, and she said that this house was hard to sell because people didn't stay long in this house. I did remember thinking it was strange at the time, but I soon was too captivated by the house to care. The house was perfect, but I was starting to think that it wasn't so perfect after all. Darkness, tragedy, pain. These things hide within every beloved institution, and most people are none the wiser. Hey guys, it is Spread the Love Week, and I'm here to spread the love about the dark side of. And every week, the Parcast Original pulls back the curtain to bring you the most salacious stories and disturbing details behind everything we hold most dear. Episodes of The Dark Side Of take seemingly innocuous topics and expose the dirty secrets that you were never meant to know. You'll learn the dark side of Hollywood, where on the set of The Wizard of Oz, numerous accidents sent actors to the hospital, and director and Nazi sympathizer Victor Fleming reportedly beat Judy Garland. The dark side of music, where Elvis Presley was so obsessed with death that he brought friends to a mortuary at 3 a.m. to look at corpses. Who knew? And the dark side of the Bible, which contains stories of demonic giants, unicorns, and child sacrifice. Now, I don't know about you, but I love myself some gossip. And what better gossip can you get than Elvis Presley looking at dead bodies at 3 a.m. So you've heard the good side. Now, hear the dark side of. Search for and subscribe to The Dark Side Of on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's again, that's The Dark Side Of, and you can visit parcast.com/darkside to listen now. Now, you guys, remember, go spread the love. You know you want to listen to Dark Side Of, because I know I'm curious, and I know you're curious. And let's all be curious together. Back to the show. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had an episode called Demons Love Pie 2. Now, it was inspired by the story within that episode called Scenes from the Worst Family Reunion Ever by Lauren Embling. I have gotten a lot of love from that story, and I hope, Lauren, if you're out there, I just want you to know that people have been asking for more ever since that episode came out, and Lauren has delivered. Here is part 3 of scenes from the worst family reunion ever. If you haven't heard part 1 and 2, like I said, just go back to episode, I can't remember the number, but it's called Demons Love Pie 2. Go back to that episode, listen to part 1 and 2, and fall in love like so many others have. Here we go. I stared at Mal. I don't know, Mal. I might not be ready to... He motioned to the bedroom. You'll do fine. Better than fine. You'll do great. My legs carried me on autopilot to the bedroom, and I got into some leggings and a cute dress. Combed my hair. Added some eyeliner. Trying to look like I went to the pit all the time, and not like I was meeting my demon parents for the first time, you know? He held out an arm to me as soon as I came back. I'll send somebody to bring Bella outside soon. So how long are we going for? About an hour in mortal terms. Time's sorta wiggly in the pit, but not as long as you're scared it'll be. I grabbed his arm and we were dissolving from the apartment. I felt the cool air on every atom of myself and the crawling sensation of my cells and organs as they recombined. Fuck, I said.
Hey,
said Mal.
Language.
We were in an old-style elevator, moving at enormous speed down and down. Everything shook and clanked, the lights blinking off and on. He held me in place as we rocketed downward. My braided hair flew up and hovered as we descended, until it smacked the back of my neck as we made a hard stop, nearly falling. It's sort of intense in the atrium. Hold my arm. I did, and we stepped out into what looked like the floor of a stock exchange, full of shouting, jostling people. Some of them were demons and some of them weren't. The mortals had a slightly bluish cast hovering around them like an aura, and a lot of them were shouting and shoving. Mal bent down and murmured in my ear, "See their numbers?" Above each head, a number was glowing, blue like the aura was. The lower the number, the shittier the person. I saw a negative 10 billion one time. That was a while ago, though. What had they done? Started a world war, among other things. A creature was coming toward us. The body of a man, but the head was a bull's. The eyes were red and rheumy. The snout short and lashed with foam.
Abandon all hope and get in line!
Mal held out a hand.
Wow, dude, really? It's been that long?
The Minotaur shook its massive head and then Mal's outstretched hand.
Sorry, Mal, gotta run. The boss is watching.
We walked on, pushing through the queues of people. The constant noise was giving me a headache. Demons waved to Mal and he called their names, smiling at the ones he knew as we walked through the crush and then down a corridor. It was quieter now that we were out of the atrium. He led me down and down. I want to take you through the city a bit. Nobody here can hurt you, but make sure you keep an eye out all the same. We walked out of an unmarked door and into thin, greasy sunshine. The air had a gray cast and tasted like diesel, like old grease traps. A bus trundled by, packed to capacity. Bland faces stared at us from every window, hostile and mundane. A few storefronts beckoned here and there, some selling fried food, some selling phone cards or small TVs or liquor. The crowds around us congealed and loosened, swelling unpredictably and then draining away just as fast.
So, no fire? the Damned don't connect with it like they used to. Now it's more of a self-directed model. We just put them in the world they made forever.
Above us, skyscrapers leered down. So high, it was almost impossible to see the top. Groups of men dressed alike stood in knots, holding flyers. One of them tried to shove something into my hand, and I jerked back.
"Don't touch me, bitch," said the man.
And then he was flying back into traffic. The bus never slowed down, the driver simply using the wipers to flick the blood off. The man laid in the middle of the street and then began to stand again, bones cracking and popping as they moved back into place. Mal scoffed. "Nazis, man, they never learn."
"Did you..."
He watched the man slowly make it to his feet.
"Duh."
We walked on, ignoring other groups, ignoring women sitting in doorways who called out to us, and men who showed us handfuls of watches or phones.
"We're going to your dad's office to start. I think he's probably called your mom by now.
They aren't together anymore." It was a sleekly black thing, a building made of glass, tortured into shapes so inventive, I can't really describe them. It was light but menacing, and the oily sunlight didn't seem to touch it. Mal raised a hand and the door slid silently open. We walked inside and Mal led me to the elevator.
"It's a lot better than the other one, so don't worry."
We stepped inside. It was cool and silent and smelled like nothing. We rose and rose and rose. "What are their names?"
"Your father is Masterna, and your mother is Anno Scalise."
We were close now, and my stomach was a clenched fist, knotted tight. I stopped. "Mal, what do I call them?"
"Try Mom and Dad."
He opened the door at the end of the hall.
"Hi, Uncle Mass."
A very normal-looking middle-aged man was sitting in the midst of a very normal-looking office.
"Hello, Mal. Come in."
He rose, and when he did, there was a rustling sound. A shivering, slithering sound that cascaded over my nerve endings like cold fire. His wings were black as night, the feathers moving over one another, never stopping for a second. Mal gently pushed me forward.
"This is Beth."
"Hi," I said, and tears began to run down my cheeks.
Hello?
He held out his arms and I embraced him, and he embraced me, and we stood like that for a long time. He finally stepped back and said,
"You look a little like her, like your mother. I never thought I'd see you so soon. How are you?"
I'm okay. I'm glad we could meet. Thank you for sending Mal for me." He sat down and nodded for us to sit down.
"I have missed you. Every second of these 477 years."
My head whipped to look at Mal, who said,
"Wobbly time."
The door behind us chimed once.
"You rang, Moss?"
"Oh no.
I have someone for you to meet."
She was a handsome middle-aged woman. No wings, but a pair of small, neat horns on her head, above her perfectly coiffed silver hair. She stepped in, and when she saw me, her face went paler.
"Is this?"
I stood, and she ran to me, somehow not falling off her vertiginous heels, and almost pounced me.
I was sobbing, and she was sobbing, and when she stepped back, her flawless makeup had not moved a bit. Oh, my child. You're home. You're home. Hi, it's good to... I swallowed hard. It's good to meet you. I'm so glad to... Wow, I have parents now. And then all of us were crying. Even Mal looked a little wet-eyed. He sniffled a little and said, "She does have to go back before too long." "Why?" said my dad. It felt so surreal to even have a dad, and then to find out he was some kind of demon lord. "I have my pets and the business, and my neighbors kind of need me to do stuff for them sometimes." It felt stupid to say that I'd leave my parents after I found them because of some randos in a business that wasn't actually mine, but it felt true, too. "Not unadmirable," said my mother, "but perhaps we can visit for a bit first. Can someone see about the neighbors?" Mal nodded. "I'll terrorize some of those chuckleheads into helping out." He pulled out a cell phone and began furiously texting. My father watched him, shaking his head. "You young people," he said, "are dependent on your phones. In my day, you sent an imp, or perhaps a junior tempter." "I would, but the people I'm texting are junior tempters." He said, "Why don't you take Beth to freshen up and rest a bit, and we can all meet over dinner?" He looked at me for a long moment. "We'll explain more then. For now, I feel as if we all need to process a bit." I rose, hugging them both again. Mal led me back to the elevator. We went up again. "You can stay next to me. It's like a corporate apartment." "So how long?"
"A mortal hour."
Mal. He put his phone away. "It's really hard to say in mortal terms. A while for you, but you're going to go back before too long. Your life is waiting for you." He opened the door. It was a neat little efficiency apartment with a big screen TV, a couch, and a fridge. No cooktop and no real cabinets, just a small shelf for a few drinking glasses. "If you want a snack or something to drink, just hit the call button and you can have literally anything sent up. Except for alcohol, of course."
"There's no alcohol here?"
"Imagine how many demons can control fire. Then picture them getting drunk. Now imagine them getting into an argument after that incident in the 3rd century. We had to ban it. Never did get the scorch marks out of the carpet in the lounge."
"Good point." I sat on the couch.
"It's nice in here." He nodded. "Beth? You only have to say the word and you can stay here." He held up a finger. "You don't have to decide now. Give it some thought." He handed me the remote. "Simpsons?" This next story is by frequent contributor, you guys know her, you love her, Catherine Eddowes. This story she sent me. I wish you guys could read it off the page like I did. I really hope I did it justice. It's one of the most beautiful horror stories I've ever read. It's just so different, and you'll see. But this story is called Grace, My Darling.
I want to be
By the sea.
Main Street, the summer of 51, was deep and distended, like a wide eye that looked out emptily towards the Pacific Coast and Sonoma Beach.
Grace walked past Mr. MacGuffin's liquid blue Thunderbird. The Thunderbird sparkled cerulean as it stretched against the sidewalk, and it had the conviction of its own price tag, like a very expensive sky blue coffin. In the sun of the August afternoon, the car winked at Grace and smelled of car polish and wax, and beneath both of these there was a resilient residue of cigar smoke. Grace ran her sharp, delicate fingernail along the side of the car and glanced back at the malicious little white line it made. She snapped her bubble gum and smiled winningly in at Mr. MacGuffin's taxidermy shop. From within, Mr. MacGuffin beamed back at her. Snap. Maybe she'd kill him first. Grace's skin was young and soft and alabaster, and it made the old men drool. Grace knew this and hated them for it. Her Siberian blue eyes as numbing and frozen as any of Stalin's gulags looked on them with practiced derision. If those old men could have seen what was really behind those eyes, they would have shivered in dread. Because here, there were only delicious, fancied deaths, horrors only yet imagined. But Grace was about to grow up, and into herself. She walked down Main Street in her perfectly shaped pedal pushers. She noted every single look, and in her head, she suffocated those old men with plastic sheeting. They didn't see beyond the narrow waist and small, budding breasts. Didn't see she was murdering them at night while the rest of the world was dreaming. That slight little frame would fit well into air ducts and vents when everyone was sleeping. Standing outside the drugstore, Grace gazed up at the striped canopy. How cheerful it looks. Inside, other town kids sat on rotund stools at the counters, and the creamy vibrations of Nat King Cole's Too Young sounded from the record booths. Grace knocked her little knuckles on the window, and two bright-faced 14-year-old girls turned and waved at her, beckoned her in. Grace shook her head. No, can't. Shrugged and rolled her eyes. Mouthed, so much to do, errands, mother. Grace's own voice was soprano and bouncy. Her laugh was utterly fake, and it sounded like a squeal. But it fooled people. The two girls frowned. Too bad. Sorry. Grace waved and smiled an impressive white smile. Chirped at them. Later. Bye, girls. She didn't have time for the girls today, though, even if keeping up the appearance of normalcy was tantamount, today she was searching for the next two signs. The first had come this morning in the bathroom at home. She had padded into its blue ocean, the crystal turquoise linoleum squishing against the soles of her feet in a comfortable, familiar way. She liked that feeling. It was what she imagined walking on decaying bodies must feel like. She had sat down on the can to pee. Sitting there, she had been gazing at her mother's ghastly taste and had glanced down, had seen flickering there on the whiteness of her cotton underpants, like sentient rosebuds or crimsoned fairies. Three large red spots. They floated in front of her vision and danced along the blue tiles of the walls, slip-sliding onto the white shower curtain. They seemed to wink at her, the red imp eyes that had just awoken from a deep slumber and were stretching open wide after a long time dormant. Mother, she called. And after a moment, Mother came in, all cigarette smoke and red lipstick, hair pinned up high, blonde and teased within an inch of its life, thinning at the sides because of so much hairspray. Mother cooed, "Yes, darling," and Grace, for just a moment, wondered at her destiny. Was she meant for this after all? This dream of hers? This black as pitch, nightmarish dream? Coal dark and obsidian, but bright, ruby red hot. A dream that burned, sizzled, and scalded her heart with a dusk and made her want, want, want. Mother looked at her, quizzical and placid, but beneath the waters of Mother's eyes, there was a brief vibration, and Grace wondered if Mother had known all along what her darling really was. Then the moment was gone, and Mother's eyes saw the blood spots. "My darling, I told you it would come. See?" Mother smiled her crimson smile, and the lipstick seemed deep and lubricious, and in a soft swish of green material, she was searching the cupboards for sanitary napkins, her nylon underskirts just peeking out from her perfect pencil skirt. "There, darling." She placed them on the side of the tub. "Aren't you pleased?" Yes, Grace was pleased. It was the first sign. Mother was drawing her a bath. "Have a bath first, darling. Call me when you're done, and I'll help you with the belt." She kissed Grace's forehead. "Darling." She smiled as Grace sat bare-assed on the can. Grace breathed deep and felt the beginnings of herself. She had been waiting and watching, and now she would release herself from her protective prison. She was 13 and had begun to wonder if the sign would come at all. Sitting in the deep welled bathtub, Grace eyed the packet. Beltex, Sani Shield. White and blue packaging with a curved, tanned stomach floating down the middle. There was another moment, a flicker of a moment, when she thought all of this destiny stuff might just be in her head. She might not be fated to this deliciously tenebrous future she saw for herself. And in that briefest of moments, she reached out and touched the fluffy cloud towels on the shelf, feeling the memory of getting out of the tub and Mother's long arms around her. She felt a moment's, just the shortest-lived flash of a moment's, guilt at having thought Mother's taste was ghastly. The moment was gone almost instantaneously. Mother's taste was ghastly. Now, on Main Street, she looked towards the beachfront again and was glad that Labor Day would be here soon and the tourists would be gone. The summer had felt long and fatigued, had felt like it was on the edge of something and needed a release. Up ahead, Jimmy Novak was smoking on the corner of Main Street, in the alleyway that led off of Kelly's laundromat. He was leaning against the wide window of the diner just before the laundromat, and he had a small group of buddies and gals who looked at him with utter adoration. Jimmy Novak was a greaser, and Grace had always thought he looked grubby, but he had very high cheekbones and big, easy lips that invited daydreams of kissing, and his lizard green eyes were cloudy with an inviting kind of trouble. Grace bounced along the sidewalk and snapped her gum in her best imitation of a 13-year-old girl. Snap. Jimmy Novak stubbed out his cigarette and looked at Grace. She approached the diner and saw from the corner of her eye. There were more kids inside. They sat around drinking milkshakes, frothy pink and yellow. And they were laughing. Rosemary Clooney was singing, "Come on to my house," from within, and Grace could hear its dull tones, the way one does from out with a buzzy sound. "Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy." Instead of moving off from his slouch, Jimmy Novak nodded goodbye to his entourage and they wandered off. He lounged back against the diner window. Grace approached. He looked at her and lit another cigarette, and his eyes were slanted and oblique. His arm, dirty and presumptuous, reached out and barred her way, an intransigent rod in front of her small face. His skin there was dirt-splattered and bewitching, the tan and spatter contrasting exquisitely with the white of his rolled-up t-shirt. Grace stopped. This was the second sign. Had to be. Jimmy Novak had never talked to Grace before. Jimmy Novak smiled at her now, and his big lips made a long line like a deep incision. Those high, self-assured cheekbones glimmered back at Grace, and Grace gave her best bubblegum snap. "Come on to my house, figs and dates and grapes and cakes, say, Grace, isn't it?" That was all Jimmy Novak, the great Jimmy Novak, said to her. His first words to her. "Yep, that's me. I've seen you in English class." "Yeah, boring." "Oh yeah, sure. Hate all that Cornish shipwrecking. Boring." "Huh?" "Nothing." Jimmy Novak's voice was deliciously Ophidian, and the decisive, pushy inflection was languidly appealing in Grace's ears. Without saying any more, he reached out that tanned, grease-spattered arm and drew her closer. He pulled her into the alleyway with him where he kissed her. "Come on to my house." The alleyway was tight and dark, but the muffled noise from the diner still tinkled in Grace's ears, and she let Jimmy Novak kiss her. His lips tasted dusky and deep, and it didn't even matter to her that they were in an alleyway on a corner of Main that led off Kelly's laundromat. When he pulled away, Grace let him again. His eyes were like green viper's eyes in the darkness of the alleyway, and they looked her over, assessing. Her own wide blue eyes looked back at him coolly. She waited. He spoke again. "Want to go for a walk?" "Sure." "Where?" "The beach." Grace's voice was high and cultish, and she loved the sound of it, so different to the one in her head. It was this candy voice, not the blackish, nebulous one that spoke again. "Meet me there in an hour at the boardwalk, the old boardwalk." And at that, Grace bounced away, feeling Jimmy Novak's eyes on her, just like all the old men. "I'm gonna give you everything." Grace walked to the beach straight after the alleyway. She needed time to think. She needed to find the third sign. If she didn't see it, she wasn't sure she could go through with it. Wasn't sure she should. She sat down on the sand and took off her sandals, feeling the gritty roughness between her toes. This part of the bay was quiet. The new boardwalk attracted most people nowadays. The older one here was rickety with age and neglect. Grace loved it here. No tourists. The summer was ending soon. The day was nearly over. The sun about to set into the deep waters of the Pacific coast. Great for a drowning accident. Just one slip of the foot on a rotten board. The afternoon felt as though it was on the verge of something. Just as the summer had. All the long weeks previous. The Californian sand was straw amber, and Grace looked out towards the margin of the bay. The wild horses that lived on this part of the beach stood around as though they had nowhere better to be, their yellow tails flipping gently back and forth. The light shifted itself around their hooves and shafts along the sand, and in broken moments the sand looked bleached of color like a bone in the desert. Chalky and snow-like. Far off, a crop duster was circling over Mr. Manderley's farm, and Grace wondered what it might be like to fly. The same as falling, maybe. When she heard the seagulls, the noise they suddenly made was a screeching group squawk, and Grace knew straight away that her third sign had arrived. There were crows also, and they were flapping and calling some distance away from her, a sand dune over, almost as though the crows had invaded the seagull's turf and had called a rumble. The whole thing was like a black swarm buzzing on the horizon of her life, and they drew her to them. Her bare feet sashayed through the sand, feeling the burning hotness as she moved towards the black mass. She approached, and the crows took no notice of her, and continued to pick the rotting flesh of a wild horse lying there. The sign was confirmed. The horse had been there some time, the muscle and sinew decomposing to almost nothing, but its beautiful head was, strangely, mostly still intact, and Grace looked into its sad eyes and felt a tear well up and roll down her cheek. She touched the tear with her finger and looked at her wet fingertip for some time. She kissed the horse's head, thanking it, and looked over its body. Its leg was broken, and the white of bone stuck out from the decaying flesh, sharp and terrifyingly beautiful. The splinter blinked in the light of the beach, set against the horse's dark black innards, buzzing beautifully with flies. Grace reached out to the bone. Once in the carcass, she felt the slimy sludge of the horse's insides. And as she pulled, the body made a sucking noise as the bone tore away, like it was exhaling. It came away easily, as though it had been waiting for her to do it, relieved somehow that it had performed its most important task. A task it had been born to perform. Grace examined her mush-smeared hand. It was tiny and delicate, innocent and thoughtless, and the innards now looked brown-black in the sunlight, dark copper under her fingertips. She took the bone to the water and washed it. The cool Californian ocean crisped in her small hands, brightening the bone to an angelic white. Grace looked up at the old boardwalk. It hung high over the water like a crane, and Grace imagined pushing Jimmy Novak off of it. Saw his eyes wide with surprise and his arms flailing as he fell, the air around him swirling in technicolor. But she did have the splintered bone. Which to use? He appeared over the crest of the dunes, his cigarette hung from his mouth salaciously, and smoke trailed behind him. Grace jumped up and pushed the bone down the back of her pedal pushers, ran to him in an impersonation of infatuation, and smiled up into his confident face. She kept her voice bouncy and full of sunshine. "Want to go on the boardwalk?"
"Nope. Don't like heights."
"Shame, it's lovely and cool on the boardwalk."
"Nope. Told ya. Don't like heights." "But we could go under the boardwalk."
"It'd have to be the bone. Under the boardwalk."
"Perfect, really."
They walked toward the shade and past the body of the horse. Jimmy Novak's face twisted in revulsion.
"Ah, man."
"What?"
"That, it's ugly, it stinks."
"I think it's beautiful."
"Kid, you're not a wackadoo, are you?"
Beneath the boardwalk, there was an inviting dimness. It seeped into Grace and warmed her with its darkness. Jimmy Novak took a beer from his back pocket and popped it open, took a long drink, passing it to her. Grace shook her head. Jimmy Novak was looking at her with a look that he must have thought was hot and serious. He was playing with her hair, and it felt, despite herself, pleasing. His green lizard eyes laughed at her.
"So what made you come?"
"Just felt like it."
"Oh, really?"
"Yep, just felt like it."
Now he leaned in and kissed her again, and the kiss was full of warm, bleak promise, but probably not the kind Jimmy Novak thought.
Grace fingered the small bone in the pocket of her pedal pushers, tiny grains of sand pleasingly abrasive between her fingernails. And as he pried her mouth open with his tongue, Grace pulled out the bone and stuck it in Jimmy Novak's throat, her little fingers grasping more tightly than anyone who might have been there to see it would think possible. The look of surprise and horror on his face took all the lizard intelligence out of his eyes. His mouth was a beautiful dark red O, and Grace had never wanted to kiss that mouth more than in that moment. His hand reached for the ravishingly, blisteringly beautiful wound. Grace watched and felt the most immense sense of rightness she had ever felt, and she smiled her real smile. The one that no one, except now Jimmy Novak, had ever seen. She was rather glad he would be the first to see it. Rather glad it would be the last thing he saw. She moved away from the blood now pouring from his throat and his other arm as it grasped and clawed. No longer the rod-like barrier it had been in front of her outside the corner of Maine. In the alleyway leading off to Kelly's laundromat, no longer sure of itself, but flailing and desperate and enchanting. It took him some time to die, and his body crawled and jerked in the shade of the boardwalk. Grace took it all in with her cold, mesmerized eyes. When he stopped struggling and stilled, finding a sharp-edged rock, she brought it to his beautiful dead body, rubbing his bloodied throat over it, and lay them beside each other. She washed her hands and the bone in the surf and drank the rest of the beer, laying the bottle beside the body, the white t-shirt, now darkly bright and hematic, the large red stain seeping whiter over the white cotton, like a swarm of murderous red ants. She unwrapped another piece of gum. Snap. Walking back to town, she checked her clothes for blood. Nope. Perfect. The sun was thinking about setting. The light had turned a glossy shade of dim orange-red, and Grace felt the warm coolness of it inside her as she swapped her smiles. Passing the wild horses, she winked at them and silently thanked them for their last sign, the bounce in her step mirroring the fine swish of their tails. Main Street was quieting now, but inside her, Grace thrummed with possibilities. Mr. MacGuffin huffed over his blue Thunderbird.
There was, gosh darn it, a scratch. Who did that, you think?
Grace snapped her bubble gum. Snap. It was only as she arrived home that Grace wondered for a moment. Would she get caught? Was she noticeably different? Would Mother know? Mother sat in the lounge chair, and she looked like a picture from American Vogue. Cigarette in hand, delicate waves of white smoke wafting around her, steaming hotly from her nostrils. Mother looked a long, hard kind of look at Grace, and Grace noticed for the first time that Mother's eyes were exactly the same cold shade of blue as hers. Mother smiled warmly, stubbed out her cigarette, rose and walked towards her. Mother held Grace's hands in her own and looked at the brown, black mush still under her fingernails. She slid her hand to the back pocket of Grace's petal pushers, pulling out the bone and holding it up between them.
"So, my darling, it started then."
Grace inspected her mother's eyes again. They seemed on the verge of tears, but they were proud tears, and in them there was a world of horrors that the immaculate green pencil suit hid so divinely. Murders and slayings, dark and delicious and lovely. She kissed Grace's cheek. "I have so much to teach you." Mother looked long into Grace's face and smiled again. "Grace, my darling."
Thanks for listening. Remember to stick around at the end of the show to listen to a trailer for Coast to Ghost. This week's Patreon shoutouts go to Tara Voschel, who also has a fantastic podcast I've plugged on the show before called Three Spooked Girls, so add that to your list. Bob Gullick, Jeff, just Jeff, welcome back to Carrie Ann Doring, and Alyssa Gingle. Again, I profusely apologize if I butchered any names. Now, bring it in for our hug over the airwaves. Thank you so much, you guys, sending you love and good vibes. Oh my God, and I have a couple of big thank yous. You know author D. Calhoun. He has a book out right now, and he so graciously thanked me in it for featuring some of his stories on my show. I will link that in the show notes so you can support him. Go buy his book, please. And to Shane Bumsoo Kim, who made two Scare You to Sleep themed Starbucks drinks at the Starbucks he works at. Go follow the show on social media to check those out. I know Facebook mod Rosemary went and ordered an O'Meal Swamp Tour, and she said it was delicious. I haven't gotten a chance. I haven't been to Starbucks in a while, but I cannot wait to go and order one of my themed drinks. It's not official, obviously, but Shane has instructions on how to order them on the Facebook page. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Scare You to Sleep. Join us on Facebook, where we make Starbucks drinks and share all kinds of spooky stuff. I think right now Jenny Waters is our biggest contributor. She's always got some scary stuff to share. Your posts are great, by the way, if you're listening, Jenny. And thank you to everyone who participates. It's been, seriously, I'm blown away that I get notifications like every day with people just like posting and wanting to talk to me. And it's amazing. I'm working on starting a Reddit page. I personally use Reddit more than I do any other social media, so I would love to get a page started. Unfortunately, I created a new account just for Scare You to Sleep, and you have to have been a member for at least
30 days before you can start a community. But hey, if anyone gets a wild hair and feels like doing that, go for it. You can start a Scary to Sleep page. If not, then it'll be about 20 days now. Oh, I think actually more than that. I don't think I've even been there for a week. So it's going to be a little bit before I get a Reddit page started, unless somebody else does. Anyway, okay. I am going to let you get some sleep. Sweet dreams.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Wait, why does it have to be dark and stormy?
Yeah, why can't it be daytime and clear skies?
Oh, for f*** sakes.
Join us bi-weekly on Coast to Ghost as we take a trip cross-country digging up the ghost of your state.
Drinks are included and pants are optional.
You can listen to Coast to Ghost on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to get spooked?